Welcome back to the New Yorker political scene. This week, the illustrious hosts of the New Yorker political scene discuss what else? What else would you expect them to talk about? It's this coming Thursday's presidential debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Unlike yours truly, the hosts of the political scene are not looking forward to this debate. For me, there's been very little to look forward to these days in American politics. This week, though, there are two things I'm excited about. First, I'm very excited about some of the races in the New York Democratic primary. Personally, I'm very invested in the campaign of Claire Valdez. She's a union organizer for the United Auto Workers. She's a Democratic socialist. She's pro-ceasefire, pro-Green New Deal, anti-developer lobby, and anti-Israel lobby. And she's running for state assembly in District 37, which includes where I live here in Sunnyside, Queens. She's been endorsed by the Democratic Socialists of America, the United Auto Workers, Planned Parenthood, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Cynthia Nixon, and a whole host of other leftist politicians and organizations. If you live in Assembly District 37, go vote for her on Tuesday. The other race I'm following closely in New York is the re-election campaign of honorary squad member Congressman Jamal Bowman. His district in the Bronx and in Westchester County was basically gerrymandered and had its boundaries moved, basically in order for the Democratic establishment to ensure that people like his opponent, George Latimer, would have an easier time defeating someone like Jamal Bowman. In recent months, Bowman's become one of the most vocal critics of Israel, and so now AIPAC is spending something like $18 million on ads for Latimer, which is a staggering amount of money for a congressional race. Just to give you an idea, Justice Democrats and the Working Families Party, who back Bowman, are spending about $2.2 million on pro-Bowman ads. So that's about a 10-to-1 disparity there. Bowman has been trailing in the polls, but over the weekend, Bernie Sanders and AOC appeared with him at a rally in the Bronx. So I'm curious to see if that late push can help him in the face of so much pro-Israel money. Or maybe Bernie Sanders and AOC aren't actually able to deliver votes for someone like Bowman the way they might have in previous election cycles. Of course, the other thing I'm very much looking forward to is the presidential debate on Thursday. It's going to be hosted by CNN's Jake Tapper and Dana Bash, a couple of very pro-Israel anchors, for what it's worth. It will be on at 9 p.m. Eastern, Thursday evening. I'm sure that the next New Yorker political scene episode will be all about the debate, so look forward to my analysis of their analysis. Like I said, there is very little to be excited about these days in our politics, but the spectacle that this debate will undoubtedly be, it's like a very small gift that our rotten political system gives us. It's like the modern equivalent of watching the gladiators do battle in ancient Rome. A little gift for the masses from the Caesar. I'm not saying it's going to be very useful in terms of trying to sort out which of these two candidates people should vote for. I think at this point, if you're tuning into this debate to try to sort that out, you might need to seek out help from like a social worker or something. When I was in junior high, there was a video that I guess you could say sort of went viral, although this is before videos were like widely available on the internet. But there was a videotape that circulated in my group of friends called Bum Fights. I think later it turned into like a bigger venture for the people that ran it, and then they ended up getting in some sort of legal trouble. But the basic premise was these guys in San Diego would find homeless people and pay them money to fight each other. When you're like 12, 13, 14, growing up in San Diego, getting a hold of this thing was like the Holy Grail. Like, everyone wanted to watch it. It was entertaining in an obviously ugly way, and we all thought it was very funny. But we were like 12. Of course, it was problematic. The reason being, it was exploitative. Exploitative of these homeless guys that really needed the money, and so were willing to like fight each other for cash. In this case, we're talking about two of the most powerful people in the world. So the guilt is gone. This is like a guilt-free bum fights, basically, is what we're going to watch. It did seem for a while like a debate would not happen, and to me that would have been the ultimate insult. Like, we have to choose between these senile old cooters to lead our country, and I don't even get to watch them shout at each other for 90 minutes? Isn't that the very least that I'm owed? Anyway, it should come as no surprise to you that the hosts of the political scene are dreading Thursday's debate because they are humorless, sexless losers who do not know what fun is. Here they are now, remembering a moment from the first debate in 2020 between Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
The question is, Supreme Court Justice, radical left, will you shut up, man? Who is on your list, Joe? This is so unprecedented. We have ended the segment.
We have ended this segment. We're going to move on to the second segment.
That was really a productive segment, wasn't it? Keep yapping, man.
I've got PTSD just from thinking about it.
Yeah. Here we go again.
Just imagine dedicating your life to American politics and then just dreading what American politics actually is, and like living in some fantasy where American politics is about exchange of ideas and the best argument winning out and stuff like that. It's just completely detached from reality. Several polls have found that the majority of Americans don't want to see a rematch between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, and yet that is what our sclerotic political system has produced.
So with the race basically tied right now, 5 months before the election.
To correct Evan Osnos there, though national polling indicates that the race is incredibly close, with Donald Trump maybe with 1 or 2 points, depending on the poll, over Joe Biden. When you look at polling in swing states, which is actually more important, that's what will determine who wins or loses the presidential election, according to the Electoral College, Joe Biden is in pretty dire straits. According to the Washington Post's recent polling averages, Donald Trump is leading in Nevada, 50% to Joe Biden's 41%. In Arizona, Trump has 49% to Biden's 44%. In Georgia, Trump's 49% to Biden's 45%. In North Carolina, Trump with 49%, Joe Biden with 45%. In Michigan, Donald Trump with 48%. Joe Biden with 46%. Pennsylvania, 48% to Biden's 46%. And then the national polling average, they have it at 48%, 48%. And Wisconsin, 47% and 47%. That's pretty close in Wisconsin. But the vast majority of the other swing states, Donald Trump seems to be well ahead of Joe Biden.
The question I think we're all considering is, will this debate actually matter? What determines when a debate is consequential or when it's largely ignored? And what can history tell us about these important questions?
See, the questions I'm most interested in are like, will someone's brain ooze out of their ear on live television, or will one of them make a doody in their pants? Those are things I will be watching for.
First of all, it's going to be an Herculean effort for all of us to watch, knowing what we know about how challenging this could be.
This is the difference between me and Susan Glasser. I enjoy the debate because it's a reflection of how truly dogshit our politics are, and she hates the debate because it's not a reflection of what she thinks American politics should be. By the way, both Evan Osnos and Susan Glasser are contributors at CNN. So if you do watch the debate, it's very likely that you'll hear their analysis in the post-debate coverage.
There's no question listening to that audio from 4 years ago is to listen to probably the worst presidential debate ever to take place in history. So there's potentially no floor for these two. They're both 4 years older. In many ways, I think they're both weaker going into this debate, and we're going to see the consequences of that 4 years later.
See, to me, she's really selling it here. It's like there's no floor. There's no telling how low they might go. They're 4 years older. They're both embroiled in multiple scandals and investigations. Donald Trump's been convicted of 30-something felonies. Joe Biden's son has been convicted of multiple felonies, involving all sorts of sordid details about his crack use and relationships with sex workers and with his dead brother's wife. That, to me, spells entertainment.
The right has been going nuts with out-of-context clips and the like. a Biden. But they've also set up this weird expectations game for the debate, haven't they? Where, you know, if Biden can clear the threshold of not being a dementia-ridden, you know, senile old guy, that maybe he wins by benefit of Trump's strategy to demean and diminish him.
They really make it sound there like the reason why people think that Joe Biden is old and possibly senile is because conservatives are making clips and editing things disingenuously or using AI to make deep fake videos that are not accurate or that somehow misrepresent the way he communicates and moves through the world. I'm telling you, as a TV news producer who spent a significant number of time watching Biden's speeches during his presidential campaign and as president in their entirety, it is not difficult to find moments, and in fact, significant portions of his public appearances, where he seems sort of out of it.
Evan, do you have a sense of how they're going to handle that issue, the Biden team?
Well, you know, in some ways, this is going to put to the test what is this recurring and deeply held view by Joe Biden, which is he says, as you guys know, don't compare me to the almighty, compare me to the alternative.
What about just comparing Joe Biden to Joe Biden? We all know what Joe Biden sounds like nowadays, right? Have a listen to what Joe Biden sounded like in 2017. This is Joe Biden talking to Joy Behar on The View.
Mr. Vice President, I'm very respectful to you. Yeah, I feel like calling you Joe, though.
Call me Joe. What all right. Hell? So, Sarah Palin called me Joe.
Did she really?
He actually holds her hand at this moment.
Both your sons, Hunter and Beau, wanted you to run for the presidency in the last election. And you have said that if Beau hadn't gotten sick, you would have. Do you regret not running?
No, I don't. It was the right thing to do for me and for my family. And look, Beau wanted me to run, yeah. and Hunt and Ashley, they all did. And when Beau passed, Hunt called a family meeting and said, look, we Bidens always do better under pressure. Why don't we use this as a way to rally and stick together and fight through this?
So that's what Joe Biden sounded like in December of 2017. I think it's clear, if we're all being honest, that he has declined. I mean, it's natural. People age, they get older, they slow down. It's going to happen to all of us if we live long enough. If being in the business of journalism means telling the truth, I think it's important to be honest about that. Okay, so now they bring in a journalist, author, and historian, Doris Kearns Goodwin, who published a book recently called An Unfinished Love Story, A Personal History of the 1960s. And it's about her relationship with her husband, Dick Goodwin, who worked on the John F. Kennedy presidential campaign and, among other things, helped Kennedy prepare for the famous debate against Richard Nixon. It was the first televised debate, and one that political pundits still love to refer to now as the birth of the modern American presidential campaign, because the much more youthful Kennedy, who people thought was handsome and charismatic on television, ended up outshining the older, more experienced, and kind of stodgy Richard Nixon.
They did say that if you listen to it on the radio, you scored pretty easily the points against John Kennedy if it was a debating contest. But watching the two of them, it wasn't only that Nixon didn't look well, that he was sweating, that he wore an indistinct suit that sort of meshed into the background, whereas Kennedy was sitting up straight and wore a dark suit and looked so much better. It was also that there was just more vitality when you watched the two of them together.
Okay, so for drawing parallels between the Kennedy-Nixon debate, it would seem like Donald Trump is probably the Kennedy in this configuration. He seems more alive and vivacious and sort of like with it. And he's funnier, sort of wittier and more charismatic on camera. Is that what she's saying?
He was very mindful and very knowledgeable about what the peculiar opportunities and demands of television provided. And that was the product of a lot of work. He was grinding it out in anticipation, whereas Nixon, and I'm not trying to draw too much of a present illusion, but you know, Nixon thought, I've got this. I know how the debates work. And as a result, he was unprepared.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, preparation is what gives you that sense of confidence.
It seems like Evan is trying to say that Joe Biden is actually more like the Kennedy because he studies and prepares, whereas Donald Trump famously doesn't like to prepare for debates. But I would argue that the confidence, which is the end result of that preparation for Kennedy, Joe Biden doesn't have the confidence that Donald Trump has to think on his feet, to be witty, to be funny, to be charismatic. I mean, the guy just has so much more. If we want to use the parallel of preparation, Donald Trump has so much more preparation in terms of being compelling and charismatic on television.
Even if this debate does produce a winner, then there's going to be a whole bunch of other events that are going to follow soon thereafter. There'll be the whatever happens with the Supreme Court decisions. There'll be the conventions. You know, there'll be the summer and what's going on with some of the other cases. And then we get around to the fall and there'll be yet another debate. And I think, as you say, too, so many minds are already made up. There may be fewer people to be persuaded.
Exactly, Doris. That's why we should all just have fun, enjoy ourselves, enjoy the spectacle for what it is, have a drink, maybe smoke something, maybe have a gummy, whatever it is. Consider it a fun show that you'll get to watch on a Thursday.
What are you going to look for during the debate next week? What would you want to have asked?
You know, I mainly just hope that it won't be the circus that was the 2020 debate, which was considered one of the worst debates when Trump interrupted Biden so much. Biden finally turns around and said, "Can't you shut up?" And people felt like America lost. So what I really got to hope happens, I hope questions are asked for Trump. He's talked about what he wants to do in the second term of revenge and retribution. I mean, that would be a sad thing if that's what the second term means to him already.
Doris, I have some bad news for you. There's lots of sad things. We live in a sad world. We live in a sad time, Doris. I think you got to make peace with that. I think if you're going to feel sad watching these candidates debase themselves, you're probably better off not watching.
I hope we hear about the future of what they want to do with that second term, if they either one of them gets it, and not just sort of what the past has produced and the anger of the past. I hope that there's some words that have some meaning and that we can go back, and if promises are made, we can ask what those promises were. When George Bush promised no new taxes, he was held to that. He was hurt by that, but at least that was an older definition of what words meant.
I love this podcast because it thinks it's a politics podcast, but it's actually like a nostalgia podcast. It's like nostalgic for a bygone era of politics where George Bush Sr. can be held to account for having said he wouldn't raise taxes, and then while he was president, ended up raising taxes. To imagine of all of the shit that could happen in this debate, that what she's hoping for is that there's something that someone will be held accountable for something that they said or promised to the American people. To think that that is going to be one of the more important aspects of the debate on Thursday, it's like, it's just beautiful to know that Doris goes through the world having those thoughts.
No, none of us could imagine, nor would we want to have 4 hours of Donald Trump and Joe Biden, you know, going at each other.
Speak for yourself there, Susan. I would fork up hundreds of dollars to watch Joe Biden and Donald Trump go at each other for 4 hours.
To listen to somebody who has marinated in this history and in what makes a great leader, that really has been kind of the through line for so much of her historical writing. And so it's frankly, it's a more elevated plane to think about this 2024 election than we often have it. Now, is Donald Trump going to rise to an elevated plane? No, of course, he's not going to.
Is Joe Biden going to rise to an elevated plane? I think that's also a question worth asking.
She, like the rest of us, I think, is strapped in and bracing for a 2020 redux. And is there any way we can escape that as we, you know, sort of turn on the TV, fearing what we're going to see next week?
There are some ways that we could escape that. Donald Trump or Joe Biden could die. One of them could have a heart attack. But I think maybe a better question to ask here is, why does the political system that these three put so much faith in, the idea of American exceptionalism, that we live in the greatest country in the history of the world, why is it that that our country and our political system has produced an election between these two men? Why would that be? Maybe that's something worth pondering. I wonder if maybe they'll talk about that now. Of course not. They'd rather talk about the dangers of social media.
And I think we are again at a turning point where there's a new medium, social media, that is again kind of a revolution in politics. And that, you know, the old-fashioned kind of debate that was moderated by the wise men of television is kind of yesterday.
Ah, yes, the wise men of television. I mentioned this earlier. Thursday's debate will be hosted by CNN and moderated by Dana Bash and Jake Tapper, both of whom have really revealed their pro-Israel bias since October 7th. But Dana Bash has really distinguished herself from the rest of the pack, I'd say. She was a part of Israel's big push the day of the ICJ proceedings. Israel's mission to the United Nations put out this report about the systematic use of sexual violence on October 7th. By now, that story has largely been debunked. And that's not to say there weren't acts of sexual violence carried out in Israel on October 7th. But I don't think it's been established that Hamas was using sexual violence systematically. Dana Bash anchors the show Inside Politics. On May 1st, she opened that show with a report about what was happening on college campuses. This is the tweet she posted promoting that story. Today, destruction, violence, and hate overtake college campuses across the country, with Jewish students feeling unsafe at their own schools. It is unacceptable and hearkening back to 1930s in Europe. And here's a little taste of that report.
Now, protesting the way the Israeli government, the Israeli prime minister, is prosecuting the retaliatory war against Hamas is one thing. Making Jewish students feel unsafe at their own schools is unacceptable, and it is happening way too much right now.
So that's one of the moderators of Thursday's debate. And personally, I find it really disappointing that both Tapper and Bash are the ones moderating this debate, because it really would be good to hear some discussion of Israel. And I think, given the moderators and given the candidates and their positions, it's likely just going to be Donald Trump and Joe Biden pounding their chests about who is actually a more staunch defender of Israel. I really hope I'm proven wrong, but I kind of have a hard time imagining Dana Bash or Jake Tapper pushing back against what I'm sure will be diehard Zionist talking points.
There could be an instant in this debate that goes viral in some ways in bad faith. Look, we are right now, just in the last couple of weeks, the Republican National Committee has been circulating some especially egregiously edited clips of Biden intended to project the idea that he is unfit to be president. And I think there is going to be a flurry of those things.
Deep fakes, AI, all of this kind of thing that can really sort of tamper with reality.
It's kind of beautiful that what they're most concerned about is how things might be taken out of context or manipulated with AI and the way things are edited on social media to have you believe that Joe Biden is senile or somehow not up to the task of being president. That during this whole discussion, they've talked way more about that possibility than the possibility that Joe Biden actually does make a really public blunder or stumble. When the political scene talks about the 2020 election, one of the things they point to is how Donald Trump and his allies sowed the seeds of mistrust in the election by talking about how the election could be stolen and how Democrats were likely to steal the election through fraud. Now they're sort of preparing you for how the internet might respond to a moment where Joe Biden slips up or stumbles or says something out of pocket. And I just think that symmetry is beautiful. And on that note, I want to thank Evan Osnos for having recorded this little message to you, the listener of this podcast.
If you've been enjoying the show, please leave us a rating and a review on the podcast platform of your choice. And while you're there, don't forget to hit the follow button so you don't miss an episode. Thank you very much for listening.
And please join us next week for a debrief on Thursday's debate.